It's a little bit after 7:30. The Sunday play is the original 1962 production of Alfie Elkins and His Little Life by Bill Norton. The first of a short season of plays being broadcast as a tribute to the author who died earlier this year. Bill Owen is Alfie in Alfie Elkins and His Little Life.
I first met Alfie Elkins during the war. We were drivers together at a civil defence depot in South London. There was a lot of time to fill in during standby duties, and Alfie and I spent most of it in talking. Alfie wasn't the sort of driver who took his job very seriously.
I can't see how any bloke in his right mind could take an interest in a block of iron, and that's all an engine is, with little valves banging away to get you from one place to another.
Alfie then was in his 20s, a rather thin chap inclined to be chesty on damp or foggy mornings. He had a boyish face and a quiet, doll-like look in his eyes, but he knew everything that was going on. Our mob didn't have uniforms, but Alfie never wore overalls or boots like other drivers. He always came to work in suede shoes, a spivvy suit, and a tie with a fat Windsor knot, which was fashionable at the time. He'd make a slit at the back of his collar and then stitch it together tightly to give a cutaway look at the front. I remember the first morning we got acquainted at the Civil Defence Depot.
Hi, mate.
Aye?
Give us a tow, will you? Can't get started.
Aye, hang on a sec. Morning, Elkins.
Good morning, sir.
Having trouble with your vehicle again?
Well, what can you expect standing out here all night?
We'll have to see if we can get some sort of cover for these vehicles.
But then if a bomb was to fall, you might lose the lot. Right, mate, I've got a tow rope. Look, tow me out onto the hill and she'll start there.
Okay.
I'll blow me on when to stop.
Right.
Right, away. That'll do. I'll take the rope off.
Here, is that the rotor arm you're just putting in?
Yeah, what about it?
Well, you didn't expect your engine to start when you had that out.
Of course I didn't.
What's the idea, getting me to tow you?
Listen, on mornings when I ain't had no breakfast and I'm feeling hungry, I always see that my engine don't start.
Oh.
Somebody's got to give me a tow. That gets me away from the depot. Do you get me?
No.
Look, it means I can get down to the little cab round the corner at the bottom and have a nice feed of kippers.
Well, it's a lot of trouble just for kippers.
Ah, but on these jobs, you've got to have an excuse. Feel like a nice cup of tea and a pair of fresh kippers?
If you like. Over there.
No, not in that calf. It's a proper clutch and gear joint. Guessing away what gear they came up, what airline and what load they was carrying, they get on my wick.
Alfie usually wore two rings, one with a big black stone, and a wristwatch with a fat imitation gold strap. He was single, had his own room, and seemed to have no interest at all outside himself, money and women, although he did like a drink and a chat with his mates. He was very loath to talk about other topics, or to listen to them.
If you've got money, you can have everything in this world. Beautiful clothes, lovely women and handsome grub. Now, what more do you want? But if you ain't got money, you're a misery to yourself and everybody else. I don't know what it is, but a bloke with no money don't half depress me. I always avoid him. You've got to help yourself in this world. Listen, when I go to vote, I always ask myself one question. What can any of them give me that I ain't already got?
Alfie could be very obliging, but only on one condition. Providing it was no trouble to him. He made that very clear.
The first thing I look for in a job is the fiddle. You know what I mean? If there ain't one, I ain't interested. And there ain't any on these public organisation jobs like we're working on. That's why people on them are all so miserable. The only thing they can fiddle is time. And all you need for that is an excuse. I can't stand the sight of these civil servant blokes, you know, what you get in these offices. They're all buying their own little houses on a mortgage at places like Bexley Heath, and they set out from home with about 7 fags a day in a packet so they can ration themselves. One on the train, one after coffee, one after lunch, and if they have to give one to a mate, their day's upset. Their lives are all ordered and planned, holidays for next year, all down to the last penny. Mind you, they'll have their own little lives, they do, but it wouldn't all get on my weak living the rules about what I've got to do or what I ain't got to do. No. You take driving. There's some working blokes who quite honestly enjoy their jobs. It has happened to me, but not very often. But I know drivers who wouldn't swap their jobs for anything. They're always checking their tyres, topping up their batteries, fiddling about with their lights, polishing their windows or one thing and another, you know. And when they're driving, you'll see them keep waving blokes on, watch behind. Now, I never waved a bloke on in my life, and I reckon I'm a good driver. He could see the road ahead of me, and he shouldn't overtake me unless he can see it's safe. And he should know what I'm doing, because when I'm driving, I'm taking no bleeding notice of these goosers who are waving me on, I tell you. Now, these blokes what like their jobs are what you might call the salt of the earth, so far as work's concerned. But I'll tell you a funny thing. You'll always see a bloke like that in more trouble with the boss than a bloke like me. That's funny, ain't it? I mean, if a driver like that comes on, you know, and his engine's knocking a bit or his brakes pull a bit to one side, then he don't get upset, you know, it preys on his nerves, see? You know, he'd probably have a proper bull and cow about it, I expect. A blokes like that take their jobs home with them. They bore their wives stiff talking about the job. They can't sleep at night for thinking of better ways to work it. And what do they end up with? Thrombosis. Now, I couldn't care no more than flying the air what sort of an old heap they give me to drive so long as it goes and it don't let the rain in. I don't like to spoil my clobber on the job, I tell you. But some of these bosses, they ain't got no sense to see that they've got a good man. A good man likes to do a good day's work and then he needs a pat on the back for doing it. And if I was a boss, I'd see he got one. But most of them don't. Another thing, if a boss tells him to do the job one way and he knows it ain't right, he'll start arguing with the boss right away there. Fatal, that is. Never argue with the boss. Always agree, always let them have their own way about it. That's why they're bosses, because they like their own way. And when you go out, you go and do the job your own way. You see what I mean? Take no notice of what he says. And 9 times out of 10 anyway, you'll forget all about it when you get back. But these good drivers, see, you know, they won't give way on principle. And the next thing, you know, they're giving their notice in. It nearly always happens to good blokes what can't get on with the boss. A bloke what puts his heart and soul in his job, no matter what it is, only makes himself a nuisance these days. But same as I say, what I always look for on a job is a fiddle. That keeps you interested. And interest keeps you young. I remember the first job I had when I left school as an errand boy at one of these tailor sweatshops, you know, over the East End, where they make the kids' suits and things, you see. Now, what I used to do was to nip in with one of these suits into the bulk, you see, where nobody was looking, slip mine off and put it on, and then put mine back over on top, because I especially wore my big brother's jacket, you see. And I'd nip home quick as I could to take it off, and Alice, you know, she was my stepmum, she used to flog it in the pub at night. And I mean, she used to get as much as 10 bob a time, you see, for some of them suits. Well, it gave me an interest in the job, see? I used to run around. I was quite popular and all. And one day I comes out the bog and I've got a job getting this suit on under mine, you know. Well, it's a bit big, you see. Anyway, when I comes out, there's the governor waiting for me. He was a nice bloke, but he had a sad face, you know. It made you feel sorry for him.
Hello, sir.
Hello, son. Yeah, don't rush off.
Was there something, sir?
How you liking this job, Alfie?
Ain't bad. I mean, to be quite frank, I like it.
Yeah, you seem to have put a lot of weight on since you come on it.
Eh? Yeah, that's what my mum says. I've got to be off now, sir.
Hey, just a minute. My, just feel these shoulders, Alfie. And your chest.
Oh, well, it's...
Yeah, look at your shoulders. Why, you're all but bursting out of them.
I had a big dinner, sir.
You certainly had. Anything you like to tell me, Alfie?
How do you mean, sir?
Alfie.
Yes, sir?
You shouldn't have done it. Now go in there again and take it off.
Take what off, sir?
Take what you got on underneath off. Now in you go.
Down the hole, you'll only block the plumbing up.
He didn't give me in charge or nothing. They don't. He just took the suit off me and said he didn't think I was suitable for the job, and he paid me a week's wages, you know. I had a few jobs after that. Some was apprentice jobs to trades, electrician and mechanic, but I don't like them. Under a roof, seeing you were supposed to work all the time. So I turned them in. My dad always advised me against doing any job I didn't like.
I'll tell you one thing, Alfie. There's nothing in this world worse than going to bed at night with a feeling on your mind that you've got to get up in the morning and go out to a job you don't like. It'll take years off your life, so don't never do it. You're better out of work. And on top of it, the longer you do the job, the harder it gets to change. So you get some blokes working all their lives at a job they detest. It done half make an ump, you do.
Yeah, talking about having a fiddle on a job, listen to this. I was driving with one of these cut-price wholesale firms, you know, and I had a nice little fiddle on the go. It bought me 2 or 3 nicker a week. Well, it's nothing to shout about, but it was quite handy.
And tell me, how'd you work it, Alfie?
It's dead simple. There was one loader on the loading bay that always slipped me an extra crate of salmon with me orders, you see. And nobody's going to spot that unless they stripped me down and went through all my notes. Now, 2 dozen cans at 4 bob a can, so that comes to just under a fiver. Now, I'd flog it to the manager at one of the shops. He'd slip me 50 bob and make as much for himself, you see. Now, I slipped this bloke on the bay 25 bob and I'd have the same myself. Or I might even tell him I only got a couple of quid for it, and I'd slip him a quid and I'd have 30 off for myself, you see. Anyway, he'd slip me one morning, and here I was loading away. I was whistling on a job, you know. That's the point. Never look cheerful on a job if you're doing a fiddle. It only makes them suspicious. When the next thing, anyway, out of the corner of my eye, I spots the governor watching me.
...42... ...44... ...46... ...48. That's your 4 dozen, Alfie.
Right, I son.
6 sacks of flour to go on next.
Right, mate.
Cheerful this morning, Elkins.
Oh, morning, Gov. Yeah, some days I feel like it, you know.
You can't be that cheerful on what I'm paying.
What's that?
I was just saying, a bloke couldn't be all that chirpy on the wages I'm paying.
I don't get you.
Come here. Look, Elkins. I reckon you're on a nice little fiddle on this job.
Oh, me? Fiddle? I take exception to that remark.
Yeah, don't come in. Where'd you think I was brought up? And how do you think I got where I am?
What you might like to say about yourself is one thing, but what you say about me is another. You've got to prove your words.
Listen, I ain't going to strip you, Van. All I'm telling you is that you must be on a nice little fiddle.
Who says?
But yeah, you do your job well and you look after your motor. You're always on time, and as far as I can see, me stocks ain't much art. So I'd soon have you doing me out the odd case of this and that. And some bloke what don't fiddle but can't do his job. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I get the general idea, Gov.
Only let me give you a warning. Don't overdo it. Don't get greedy. That's how all the clever and spoil themselves. They kill the goose. Because the job will stand a bit, but it won't stand too much.
He did me a good turn, he did. I was getting greedy. But once he was onto me, I watched me step.
Alfie liked to spend the early part of an evening in a pub with his mates, and then go off to meet a woman friend and go dancing with her, or possibly have a few drinks. He was fond of going to the pictures, too, but it seemed he preferred to go there alone. He appeared to be very successful, by his own standards, in these love affairs, and although he wasn't too boastful, he did like to talk about them. At times, he was disconcerting to follow because of a certain usage which seemed common among his friends. They'd refer to most women as it.
Yeah, I met it near Barney. He waved me down, see, and I stopped and picked it up. It looked a bit tatty. He said it was cold, see. Anyway, I took it in a cafe and staked it to a last tea and a couple of rounds of toast and drip, and when it was warm, cool, it came up lovely, if you see what I mean. It said it was 19. In fact, young Benny spotted it, and he tried to lap it up when my back was turned, so it couldn't have been that rough, or Benny wouldn't have fancied it.
It was sometimes difficult to keep the image of a woman in mind from this sort of talk, and indeed that may have been one purpose behind it. But not all Alfie's conquests were the sort of girls who drifted into these cafes. He had a wide variety of women friends, some much older than himself and some very young, and a number of lower middle-class women he came in contact with. Once he told me of the technique he used to break down their reserve.
What I like to do with a woman first is to make her laugh. You'd be surprised how many women are in need of a good laugh. The next thing I do is I'll fatten them up a bit. I know it's the oldest thing under the sun, and they know it too, but the fact is most men are too mean or miserable to say something nice to a woman. Now, once I've got round to it, I works in another little tactic, you see, but this is a bit risky. I lets my true nature come out, do you know what I mean? Well, they've had their bit of fun and their bit of flattery, now they've got to take me as I am. And they get so that they know where they are with you if you let them see what you think. Now, another thing, I don't go in for all this caper of paying for them here, there and everywhere. I was up with one the other night. Now, she's got a good job, and I asked her what she's going to have, you see? So she says, a whiskey. So I come back with a whiskey and a lighthouse. So when we've done that, I says, what are you going to have? And she says, a whiskey. So I goes up the bar, I come back with two lighthouses, you see? She did not give me a look, yeah. I'm a whiskey drinker, she said. So I said to her, that might be, but I ain't a whiskey buyer. If you want a whiskey, go out and get yourself one. It was touch and go for a minute. But then she saw where she stood, and after that we got on beautiful. She tells me I'm a real meanie, and I says, of course I am when it comes to buying whiskey. And I think you should pay for the next round. And she paid. Women don't mind paying. What they don't like is feeling under an obligation. If a woman wants to pay, I'll never stop. Because you only make a niggly.
Alfie had a vivid way of telling these things. And once he got going on a story, he could hold you by his flat belief in all he'd done, and by his colourful asides as he went along. One night, when we were on duty together and couldn't get any sleep, he told me why he hadn't got married.
No, I ain't never let a woman talk me into getting married. Now, I likes to go with two kinds of women, mainly. I likes to have a little girl, you know, ain't too fussy on tap. Once possible, you know, without being a smash a lot. And you might say you're doing them a bit of a favour to go out with them, you know. But sometimes you get that sort of bit on the plump side, and they can be very mumsy, and I like that, you know. Of course, in moderation. You fills at home with them, you can say what comes into your mind. You know, there don't seem any point in marrying one like that. For one thing, they're inclined to let a bloke go his own way, and for another, you can't show them up anywhere. They ain't good enough. Now, another kind I like is these tall, beautiful birds, you know, as good dressers like. I've had a few smashes like that. You could take them anyway. But I never found one I'd fancy being hitched up to. I did go up for a long time with a good kid. She was the first sort, you know, don't pester a bloke too much. Anyway, her name was Gilda, and this little Gilda wasn't stupid, but she was simple. She'd do anything for me, and she bought me some smashing presents. Anyway, after I'd been going out with her for about a year or more, it comes out she's in the family way, see? Well, what didn't you tell me, I says? So she said she didn't want to worry me. Anyway, she says, Alfie, let's carry on with it. I said, are you going up your nut? Well, I ain't getting hitched up. No, you don't need to, she says. When he's born, I'll get him adopted by a rich woman, see? So he has a good home, and I'd like to do that much for him. Well, I don't go against her. I mean, in a way, I couldn't. Anyway, I suppers it up. Now, when the time comes for little Gilda to go in hospitals, you know, she's to have this kid, like. And it turns out to be a boy, same as she said it would be, and he whopper, you know, he goes about 8.5 pound, he do. All the nurses go crazy about him. Now, when little Gilda sees him, she gets what they call a change of heart, you know what I mean? And she don't want nobody to take him away from her. And when I goes to see her, I see she's taking on a real mumsy look, you know, even in just in a couple of days, you might say. Anyway, she starts sort of feeding him herself, see, with what they call the breast, like, you know. And I explains to her, he'll only get dependent on her with that now. But you couldn't talk no sense into her. Half the time, she didn't even seem to be listening to me. I don't want nothing from you, Harvey, she says, except for you to come and see me and Donald when we come out. Yeah, what about the rich woman, I says. Sod the rich woman, she said, or worse to that extent. She don't want to know. So then she says on her last day in hospital, can I help you? I said, well, can you what? And she says, can I keep him? I said, well, of course you can, he's yours, ain't he? What got me was the way she asked, you know, she looked at me as though I was a savage, what might have murdered the kid. After all, I mean, I've got nothing against him. He'd done me no harm. It was just that, well, he'd mess things up a bit, and a bloke don't want to be bothered, if you know what I mean. Anyway, she goes back to living in her little room, see, and she starts to work at a brewery and pays £2 a week for a woman who had 5 kids of her own to look after little Donald all the week, and she has him at the weekends. She picks him up every Friday, see? And she goes round to have a look at him during the week. So I says to her, you must be up. You're not sweating your guts out lugging them beer crates about and then handing 2 knicker a week over to that old cow what'll only bring the kid up rough, same as her own kids are, and he won't be able to talk proper. And you can't go to the pictures or go to a dance or come out for a drink at the weekends for looking after him, when you could have had him with a rich woman what have brought him up beautiful and dressed him handsome and it wouldn't have cost you a penny. In fact, you might have had something yourself. I want to bring him up, she says. You can never bring him up, I said to her, like this rich woman could. And he'd never know but what she ain't his mum. But I talk sense into her, not on your life. It's her kid, she says, and she ain't letting no other woman have him, no matter how much money she's got. I said, you know what you are, don't you? You're selfish. And then when I says to her I ain't too stuck on spending every Sunday with her and the kid, she says she'll fling herself into the river if I desert her. Well, she's got me there because she knows I ain't that hard-hearted. And when I sees her crying, if it means so much to her, I thinks to myself, well, I'll do her out of it. Yeah, I mean, it don't cost me nothing. But it don't make me feel rotten when I see a woman crying on me, you know, with their faces all wet and their skins get all hot like, as though they were kids, and short of giving them a swipe across the kisser and tell her to belt up, you know, you've got to feel with them like. And if I give way to my feelings like that, you know what, I'll get tears coming to my eyes. Funny, ain't it, how soft-hearted a geezer can be. Now, about this kid, see, well, he gets in the habit of watching me, and he knows me, you know, from the time he's only a couple of months old. Gilda reckoned he was a spitting image of me. When he ain't quick, he is, you know, he gives me a look every time I come into the room, you know, and he watches me. Kids are funny like that. Well, I gets as I start picking him up, seeing one thing or the other, and when she's gone up, we're on our own, we start having to play around, you know. And now and again of a Sunday morning, I pick up a toy or two for from the lane, like, you know, because he likes anything like that, you see. And then he gets to call me Daddy. Well, at least Gilda said it was Daddy. It sounded no more like Cacca to me or something. And he keeps putting his hands up for me to pick him up. So, you see, if they ain't got you in one way, they got you in another. Mind you, this little Gilda ain't a liberty taker. No. But same as I keep telling her, I wish the old my mum had given me to some rich people to adopt when I was a kid. It'd have made my life a lot easier and I'd be a lot better off than I am now. But I couldn't get her to see sense, you know what I mean? And she don't mind lifting all these beer crates. That's a terrible job for a woman. Anyway, it comes when little Donald's about 12 months old, he's getting, you know, he can get about from one chair to another. Kids don't want looking after, you know, when they get to that age. Well, there's one geezer who works on the loading bank of this brewery, you know, a bit older than she is. You know, he gets on very friendly, he wants to marry a kid and all. So when I goes down at the weekend, I still have my own little life, you know, during the week. Well, anyway, Gilda asked me, she says, what should I do? So I said, marry him, you mug. You won't get another chance like it. Were you asking me for anyway? I mean, you're a free agent, ain't you? Well, she says it's on account of the kid, she asked me. Anyway, it never struck me she would, because she's supposed to be madly in love with me, whatever that means. And come to that, I have stuck by her in my own way. It ain't always been pleasant. But you think you know a woman, and then you find you don't. Because after I don't know how much I'm in an ironing and tears and one thing and another, what done, I'll get on my wick. Because if there's one thing I detest, it's a miserable woman moping about the place. Anyway, she writes me a letter that she's decided to marry this bloke. You know what? She cuts me off dead from that minute. I've got to play fair by him, she says. Supposed to be madly in love with me too. Because I couldn't care no more than fly in the air, you might say. Well, except when Sundays come round. You see, I'd got into the routine, or perhaps it was a kid or something, you never know, but come Sunday and I'd half feel empty. Every bleeding Sunday, I couldn't settle myself down to nothing. After all, the way I look at it, I am the kid's dad, and he has got used to me, and now this other geezer walks in and takes my place. It took me quite a bit of time to get this kid out of my system. To be quite honest, I ain't got him fully out yet. There's times when the thought of him seems to get stuck there in my nut. But I don't ever think about his mum. Well, very seldom. It's funny, isn't it?
I very occasionally had a drink with Alfie and his mates, and I got the impression that one reason for Alfie being so natural and free in his talks with me was that there was no one else he could get to listen to him. He had no compunction over telling anything he'd done, and I never saw a man so remarkably free from any sense of guilt or remorse. And also, he may have sensed that you can confess to no human being without at the same time arousing some mite of sympathy, if he's listening to you at all. And all this, or some of it, may have been the reason that Alfie appeared to get some satisfaction from his long talks with me. One evening, when the war was almost at an end and the job was coming to a close, Alfie told me the story of what he called his little life.
I was born in the last war, what they calls the first war, see? And my dad was in the army, and my mum got the flu or something about 1918, and she died. So when he comes home, he gets married to a widow of a mate of his who's been killed in the war. So it all worked out nicely as far as that went, you see. Well, when I sees my stepmum now, she don't seem a bad sort, but when I was a kid, I hated the sight of her. I never called her mum, I wouldn't, you know, I just called her Alice. I knew she didn't like it. As a matter of fact, I still do. Oh, yeah, I felt she made favourites of her own kids. Anyway, we was always at loggerheads. And another thing that got on my wits, she was always on the save, and it looked like she was always saving out of me. It made me grow up as I was always one for getting what I could for myself, and I always have been. Nobody don't help you in this life unless they're getting something out of it. I mean, you're listening to me, but how do I know what's going on in your mind? You see what I mean? Everybody's got a little secret life. Anyway, I guess I ain't too slow about looking after myself, and if there's anything going, I see how he gets his share. Now, when I was about 17, I was getting into a bit of a tear away. You know, I wasn't working or nothing, and I comes in home one day, and Alice puts an egg down in front of me for me tea. Well, eggs in them days was about 36 for a buck. So I says, blimey, I could eat three of these. So Alice turns nasty. One word leads to another. I calls her an old cow or something. She lands me, and I land her one back. If a woman swipes her, you swipe her back. It's the only way she'll understand what she's done to you. Always give them what they give you. Only harder. Anyway, the next thing, we're all going at him and tongs here. The old man as well, you know, we're all in it. I feel sorry for the old man, I did. Now I come to think of it, because I used to put the block on him when things was going wrong with me. Anyway, somebody sent for a copper, and I ends up getting hauled in front of the magistrate, and I get bound over to keep the peace for 12 months, and I find myself another place to live. He said I was only a nuisance where I was. So I went staying with a mate, and that ain't too bad for a start, but then he tells me his mum don't want me there always. Well, I don't know, I think the world's an hard place, then I do. Now, I ain't doing any work at the time, and I moves in one or two blokes like myself, you know, layabouts, who opening cars up the West End and nicking what they can lay their hands on. We used to kick the locks open, see, and when you got good at it, you could do it first time. One time, I got a nice little bag of watches, mostly gold ones, what seemed to be traveller's samples or something. Anyway, I got about 75 quid for them. That was a fortune in them days. Well, come to think of it, it's a very handy sum today, ain't it? I got myself a nice little suit or two, you know, plenty of shirts and things, and I've got a nice little room about 8 bob a week. I love anything like that, you know, having some good clobber and a bob or two in my pocket. I met a smashing pal called Alec, you know, he could drive, see, and he had special keys, so we could pick up a car, grab a bag when we feel like, you see. He'd run us to a safe spot, and then we'd desert the car. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Alec. Well, look, you see, we got in with a couple of Janes, see, what was chambermaids up at the Savoy. We had it fixed with them that we'd stand at a certain spot outside the back about 9 o'clock at night, give a whistle, and they'd have ready a great big bundle of sheets to fling down to us if the coast was clear. We always had a car ready that we'd nick for the job, and in half a minute we'd be away, and we used to flog them in some of the pubs, you know. You could always sell good sheets. Well, it all comes all smashing till one night when there must have been a wind or something. Anyway, this great tight bundle of sheets, it's old Alec, clean on the nut, knocks him flat. Then he broke his bleeding neck, it did. I burst out laughing, see, for old Alec, he don't get up, and I see he's knocked out, you know. And here I was with a stolen car I couldn't drive, the sheets I couldn't throw back up, and old Alec out to the world. Well, the first thing I thought of was leaving him, you know, and making a run for it. I don't believe in all this caper about sacrificing yourself for a mate. What good do it do him? I mean, I always say help yourself, and that gives you a chance to help somebody else. Anyway, seeing old Alec lying there must have touched me in some way, you know what I mean. So I says, come on, Alec. But he's proper hard, you know. I mean, not a dicky bird from him. Anyway, I sticks the sheets in the back of the car and then I pulls him in. And he's just beginning to come round, see, but, you know, he ain't properly with it. You know, he's still half dazed. And he don't know where he is, you know. He ain't fit to drive or anything like that. Well, I'd never driven. But I thought, well, we've got to get out of this. And I drove. What a way to learn. Cool. Blimey, there I was, going along the embankment. I didn't know one gear from another. Old Alec slumped down on the seat by the side of me, and the back of the car crammed with stolen sheets. Anyway, I'll come through it, okay? But when I think of it, God, that all make me feel funny. Well, next we had a bit of money got together, like, and we all four, that's me and Alec and two dames, we had a nice little holiday start then, and it's Ramsgate. We enjoyed ourselves lovely. Nice that was. We comes back to London one night, you see, we're going up the West End, we all had a bit to drink, you know. And we're going down Park Lane. I used to like anything like that, you know, seeing the toffs and one thing and the other. Anyway, we spots a green sports car standing a bit away from the hotel. You know, it was all loaded up with cases in the rear and that. Good stuff it was. Solid leather. Let's nick it, says Annie. There'd be a load of stuff in them cases. Well, you know how it is when you get a bit drunk, you think you could do anything. So I turns to these girls and I says, oh, look, you two walk on, we're going to nick this car. Well, that expect, you know, she's dead to good with the idea, but my name. Oh, don't, Alfie, she says, don't, you might get done and we're having such happy time. She was gone on me, she was. She'd do anything I asked her, she would. Funny natures women have got, ain't they? I often wonder what become of her. A very good-natured girl she was. Anyway, so I said, look, walk on here so nothing was happening. Go on, we'll pick you up. She don't want to go. No, I hate anything like that, you know, when you ain't all of one mind. Go on, you silly chow, I says. And with that Alex bit, you know, his girl, he lugs mine up, and I go on ahead a bit, you know, up the road and wait, you see. Then me and Alec goes up to the car and he kicks it open, you know, strikes a match to see the number on the dashboard, takes out his keys and he finds one to fit. Well, the next minute he's got it started. What does he do? He revs it up. And it's got a real old snorting roar, as you know. Turn it down, I said. The bloke, what owns it, up here? What's the matter with you? Oh, well, Alec, don't take any notice, you know. He's driving down Park Lane here. We picks up our couple of names. My one was an old clerk to see me. Oh, that was a lovely feeling, you know, sitting in the back of that open sports car with the wind blowing in your face and everybody looking at you. Now, unbeknownst to us, a taxi driver's seen what we've done. The bloke that owns the car comes out at that minute and the taxi driver tells him. So he gets in with him and they're after us. Anyway, I'm looking behind and Alec turns left instead of right at the bottom of Hamilton Place. And I said, would you come down Piccadilly Way for instead of Knightsbridge? I just fancied it, said Alec. I believe there's a taxi trailing us, I says. It got nerves, says Alec. Well, the next thing I see is this taxi draw into the curb and they call a copper. They're after us now, I says. Ain't it rotten how in about 2 minutes your whole life can change? Well, Alec flattens out now, you know. He turns up Shaftesbury Avenue, takes a turn to the left, stops and lets his dame out of the car. My mind just didn't want to go, you know. I reckon it was that stop that did us. The taxi's about 150 yards behind us, you see. Alec starts up again, takes the first turn, and now he makes my one get out. Well, she's crying her eyes out, you know. Anyway, he shoots off, swings into Regent Street, and it seems we're away. But what do? We go clean bang into a traffic block. Can't go one way or the other. So the pair of us jumps out. Stick to your story, he says, as we run off. You know, the idea was that it was the first time we'd ever done it. Well, anyway, the next thing, the taxi stops and the copper jumps up and blows his whistle. We run as fast as we can and a couple of blokes dart at me, but missed, and a third comes and hangs onto me coat. Now, I hate anything like that, I do. Blokes hanging onto me, I can't bear it. Well, anyway, he hangs onto me until the copper comes up. I don't know where Alec's gone, but he's been caught too, because the next thing I see, he's come up between two blokes who are hanging onto him, you know. Now, they takes us along to Marlborough Street Police Station. Well, anyway, the next day we're put on remand in custody, you see. Alec gets sent to Wormwood Scrubs and meet the Brixton. God, that went on rotten. I didn't like that at all. Oh, I hate anything like that. I do, you know, queuing up for a bleeding razor, no cobber to change into, and lots of stinking old blokes about. You know what I mean? And a tech comes in on the third day and he says, your mate has told all the tale of what you two been up to, so why don't you come straight? If you do, I'll speak well for you. Of course, I didn't fault for that, and neither did Alec. Well, anyway, then we have to see the court commissioner or whatever it is you call him, I don't know. And we wait, well, you know, we start to make up, we're sorry, and we cry, you know, we're all terribly sorry for our sins. Well, when the case comes up, there's my dad in court, stepmum and all the lot, so's Alex. They look, you know, everything looks dead black against us because we don't do no work for months, you know, and yet we've got plenty of money and good clothes. That don't sound rotten when they begin to say things like that against you. I reckon if you was a good bloke and you stood up in court and they read out all about you, it wouldn't half sound rotten. Then the magistrate looks at me and he goes on something open and I thought he was going to send me down for sure. But instead of that, you know, he says, I believe you merely aided and abetted and I bind you over for 12 months. God love you. Thank goodness for that, I thought. Nah, poor old Alec, he's going to get it. Well, then the magistrate turns to Alec and he says, but as for you, he says, and my heart went into my mouth, you know. Do you know what? It ended up him finding Alec £10 or something of this sort. I don't know. Right, anyway, all I do know is we went out. We had a right old booze up, I tell you. We nearly got running again, we did. Well, to be quite frank, I found I didn't fancy prison. Do you know what I mean? Some blokes can do it on their heads, as they say, but I like my own little bed of a night and I like my own little things around me and all that kind of, but you know. So after that, like, I settled down to a transport job as a mate. I mean, I'm all for a little fiddle to make life interesting, providing I've got an excuse. Well, that gives you some idea of my little life, doesn't it?
It was a few years later, about 1950, when I met Alfie again. It was quite by accident on Westminster Bridge. I saw this figure walking towards me, and I hardly recognized him. He looked so much younger and fitter.
Hey, is that you, Alfie?
Hey? Blimey, if it ain't old Lank. I thought you was a copper for a minute. How you going, mate?
Oh, not bad.
Ain't you lost some hair, huh? You ain't not got old looking, you have. You remember the job? What a lot they was, eh?
Oh, you're looking well, Alfie.
You should have seen me a week or two back. My tan's going up now. I've been selling these cowboy hats for the kids at Margate and Great Yarmouth, you know, places like that. I've been making 4 or 5 nigger a day,
ain't Get off.
Yeah, straight up. And a lot of money about, you know. And folk who ain't never had it before, I can tell you. They can't get rid of it fast enough. You're always on a good thing if you're selling toys and all that like for the kids. Especially when they're on holiday. You know, you catch the kid's eye and his mum and dad have got to buy it for him. Kids have got the upper hand these days.
I can't get over how young you're looking.
It's the haircut, you see. It adds you like my little wave in front. It lifts the hair right off my forehead, see, and that means you can get your full face properly sunburnt, like, see.
What are you working on now, Alfie?
Well, I'm doing a bit of the old driving now the season's come to an end. Here, Lank, I've got my own little place now. Got your notebook as usual?
Uh-huh.
Well, now, this is the address. Take it off this envelope.
Right, I'll get it down.
I miss them little chats we used to have. Listen, I've got a smashing little kid in now. She comes from your part of the world. Don't forget, you call round, Lank.
Aye, I will, for sure.
Blimey, I can't get over all the air you've lost. I've ate that, I would.
Who is it?
It's only me, Alfie. Lanky.
Lanky? Oh, just a tick, mate.
Sorry, mate.
Oh, that's all right.
I just wanted to make sure it was. See what I mean? Come in. Annie, it's only a mate of mine. Turn that wireless down a bit, will you? It's that little kid from up north I told you about.
All right.
I had her a couple of weeks with me now. She's a bit nervous-like. She'll be in a minute. Sit down somewhere.
Oh, my, Alfie. Have you had the decorators in? Does look nice and bright.
Nah. You know what? She done it all. She never stops working. I got so I didn't know what was the colours of things under the dirt. Look at them walls. She's been polishing away at a few old rusty knives, and now it turns out they're solid silver. They ain't not come up lovely, they have. Here, have a look in this drawer. I never knew I had so many shirts. She took the tail off one and made a new collar out of it. I no sooner takes off a pair of socks and she's got hold of them, she has them washed. She's a little marvel, she is, straight up. She's only 21 and she ain't a bad looker, except that she could do with putting on a bit more weight, you know. Annie, come in to meet a mate of mine. Well, you know what I used to work with. She's a bit shy, you know. Ain't got no clobber. She's turned this dump into an home, she has. Where you been, girl? Meet my mate Lanky. He's from up north. This is Annie.
Hello, Annie.
Pleased to meet you.
Alfie's been telling me what a lovely job you've done here.
Thanks very much. But I'm frightened I might get on his nerves.
Makes a change to see the place so bright.
Shall I make some tea, Alfie?
Yeah, do what you want, girl. What about a cup of Lank?
Oh, I'd enjoy a cup of tea.
Shall I make a bit of toast, Alfie?
Yeah. Anything you got.
I'll not be long.
What do you think of her, Lank?
Oh, she's a very nice kid, Alfie. Very nice.
Yeah, but she always wanted to make tea for everybody. I don't know where she was brought up, but she'd make a cracking little wife for some old bloke, you know, who likes to stay at home. She don't like going out, so you don't have to spend nothing on her. And talk about cook. Of course, she goes in mostly for these North Country meals, and, well, I find they blow me out a bit, you know.
How'd you come to meet her, Alfie?
Well, it was one night about 11 o'clock. She'd come in a cab. She'd come down from the north on a lorry. I don't know what she'd run away from, but you wouldn't have given tucks for if you'd have seen her. Real down at heel she was. She'd no place, see? And I chatted her a bit, so I brings her back here, but I tells her she's got to get out the next morning. To be quite frank, I didn't fancy her a bit. I only took it in out of what you might call, well, call kindness. But she turns out to be a good little worker and clean.
So you let her stay, Alfie?
Oh, no, not the next day. I turned her up when I was going all, after all, you can't leave them loose in your place what, with all your gear around. But I did promise her if she hadn't found something or someone, she could stay at the corner about 5-ish and I'd take her in and give her another night, see? Right enough, there she was waiting at 5 o'clock. She'd been wandering about on her own all day and she was dead beat. Anyway, I takes her in and she starts the cooking and the cleaning like mad, you know? So I do the same the next day. But the third day, I think it was, yeah, it was on a Friday, she asked, could she stay at home and clean up and get a meal ready for me, see? Well, I ain't too keen on the idea of leaving her here on her own. But she says, if I'm worried, I can lock her in if I want. Anyway, when I got home...
Did you lock her in?
No, I was in two minds about it, but then I thought, what's the use? I mean, if she wants to do me, she'll do me. Instead, I gave her 10 bob to do some shopping. I took a risk. At times, you've got to take a risk. Anyway, when I got home, I hardly knew the place. She's a bit heavy on the soap, though.
Yeah, can I help you?
No, thanks.
Sit down, Lake. You'll only get in the way.
Do you take sugar?
Of course you do.
Oh, thanks very much.
Here, aren't you going to have any, Annie?
I'll have mine in the kitchen.
Oh, have it with us. Go on.
No, I'm doing something in the kitchen.
Here, girl, why don't you have a rest for a change? Get your feet up.
I've some pots to wash.
Mm, please yourself.
Well, I'll see you later, Annie.
All right. There's plenty of tea in the pot.
Now, come in any time.
Thank you.
I think she's quite attractive, Alfie.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you wouldn't want to be seen around with her, though.
Why not? I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, but I'm different from you. She ain't bad. In fact, when she comes in here of a night after she's had a good wash, she's got a cracking little face. But as for taking her out, she ain't got no decent club up for one thing. And for another, did you notice how she ain't with you half the time?
No, not particularly. I just thought she was a bit on the quiet side.
She's got something on her mind, if you ask me. At times she looks dead serious, and anybody like that done, I'll put a damper on the company. I've come on her when she looks real sad. Do you know what I mean? As though she's worried about something.
Well, I expect she is. Have you found out anything about her?
No, I don't do it to ask too many questions. To be quite honest, I don't want to know, you know, get you involved. But a time or two, I've caught her looking at something in her handbag, and I've seen her with tears in her eyes. Anyway, I went through her handbag when she was out, and I saw a picture of two little kids, one about two and the other one about 12 months. Now, from remarks she's dropped on one thing and the other, I reckon she's done a bunk from home and left her kids. But same as I say, I ain't asked her, because what you don't know about, you don't think about. I mean, she don't want to go out, which looks like she's scared of the police.
What do you mean to do with her, Alfie?
How do you mean?
Well, will you keep her for good?
For good? Well, you can never say that, can you? I never worried my head about things like that, because I find it all works out in the end. But to be quite frank, I'm getting used to her being around. Do you know what I mean? Well, one thing, I've always hated doing my own shopping. I don't half have some rounds with the butcher and one thing and the other. Now, she saves me all that. And another thing, it's nice to come into a warm room and a meal. And I'm getting real used now to always having a clean shirt, you know, I can slip one when I want. I suppose it makes you a bit lazy, but it's not comfortable. The only thing is, I never know what's on her mind. And if you don't know what's on somebody's mind, you don't get real close to them. On the other hand, it's getting close to people that makes you have rows.
Mm-hmm.
We ain't even had one yet. Listen, she's scrapping away there. And she loves her little wireless.
It was a week or two later that I called on Alfie again. The moment I knocked on the door, I detected something different. And when I went inside, the place had changed utterly. The clean smell had gone, and in its place there was a stale odour of burnt cooking, smoke and unwashed linen. The floor was unswept, and Alfie's dirty socks and shirts were strewn about the chairs. And on the table stood the day's crockery.
Sit down, Link, if you can find a place to sit.
Ah, what's up, Alfie?
Eh? Take them things off the chair.
Things have changed a bit. Where's the little quiet kid, Annie?
Oh, her? Oh, she's been gone a week or two now. It soon gets back to its old style, you know.
Well, what happened? Did they come for her?
No, it was me. I flung her out, you know.
You didn't?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you how it was. Mark you, I ain't sorry. You know, not really. I'd finished work one Saturday, say, about one, and I'd had a few drinks with my mates, and at times like that, after a pint or two, I'd get what they call a, well, a little man or something comes on my shoulder, see, and he starts to talk to me. Do you know what I mean? He's simply saying something all the time in your ear.
I know what you mean, Alfie.
Well, now, I was listening to all my mates talking and laughing and one thing and the other, and in between I could hear this little man talking in my ear. He kept saying, she'll have your dinner ready now and she'll be waiting for you. You better get going. And it kept getting on my wick, it did. Then when I was on the bus, he kept saying to me, when you go indoors, she'll have everything clean and spotless, and as soon as you take your things off, she'll start washing them. And as soon as you wipe your nose, she'll take the hanky out of your pocket, and you'll no sooner have your socks off than she'll have them under the tap. He wasn't hot needling me, he was, I tell you. And when I gets off the bus, he kept saying to me, the place ain't yours anymore, you know. It's hers. I knew what he said wasn't true, but there was something in it, you know what I mean? If you have her around much longer, he says, she'll change you that much you won't be able to recognise yourself. Now, that's what I hate, a woman having the idea behind her head that she's going to change me. And as luck would have it, when I gets indoors, she'd made me one of them pie things for dinner. Hot pot, or what do you call it up there, up the north? Yeah, that's it, hot pot, that's what you call it, isn't it? Yeah. Well, anyway, she said something about it having gone dry waiting for me, quiet like. But with that, I let off and I tells her what I think about her and her bleeding cooking. It wasn't what she said, but what I was expecting her to say that got me. So I says I'd sooner have a feed of faggots from the calf. Then I goes and sloshes me hands under the tap and I wipes them on the clean towel and blackens it. And then I starts going on about all the tea she drinks and how she runs the batteries down on the wireless so that it ain't loud enough when I want it, and all the soap she wastes. But she don't say a word, and that makes me worse. So I goes a-saying things that I know are lies, but will upset her, you know. He was still whispering in my ear, see, and I couldn't stop saying things even though I knew I was being my own biggest enemy. I even said about her and the kids and one thing and the other, what must have made her known I'd been going for her handbag. And what was worse, I reckon I let her see what I must have had on my mind all the time. Well, it's not what you say as much as what you've been thinking to say it. Anyway, I picks up this bleeding hot pot and I smashes it on the floor. Something in me kept telling me to stop, but I couldn't for this bleeding whispering in my ear. Even when I smashed the dish, she don't say nothing. As though she was used to blokes behaving like that. But what she does is to go and pull her little suitcase up from under the bed and she opens it and she starts packing her one or two things in it, see? And her washing what was hanging on the line in the kitchen. Now, if she'd rucked me back or started crying, I might have said I was sorry, but she didn't. So I grab some of her stockings and things and I fling them in the case and I says, I'll help you to bleed them off back. And then she takes a last look round the room to see she got everything, which come to that wasn't very much. And the next thing I hear is the front door shut. And I knows I'm on my own again.
You must have been sorry, Alfie, once she'd gone.
Nah, to be quite honest, I was relieved. Well, I felt my old self again, do you know what I mean? I could fling me things anywhere like I always used to, and I could eat just what I wanted out of the frying pan, come to that. Of course, I will admit something was missing. I begins to clear the hot pot off the floor, and then I smell something good. You see, I opens the oven, and I sees an egg custard, what she knew I was very fond of. That gave me a bit of a turn. It showed me that she'd been doing good for me whilst I'd been thinking bad of her. After all, she had done her best and I flung her out. It was a rotten feeling, but I soon got over it. For a day or two, I tried to keep things like she'd kept them, you know, but I couldn't. So I soon slipped back to me old ways. I missed her a lot the first week, quite surprised it was, but now it's just as though I'd never seen her at all in my life. Except when I forget myself, you know, and I open the door and I think I'll get a whiff of one of them lovely dishes she used to make. I expect to see her standing there. I miss her at them times, but, well, you've got to do what you've got to do, haven't you? It's no use going against it, you know what I mean?
When I called on Alfie the next time, which was some months later, he'd left the place and there was no forwarding address. He appeared to be oddly casual in his friendships, but a couple of years later he did telephone me and I went to see him. His room was a poorer one and I was shocked when I saw Alfie. He'd gone very thin and his cheeks were sunken, and his eyes had a sickly brightness to them. Oddly enough, he still retained the boyish appearance, but he was of a tired boy. However, he was as lively as ever in his talk, except that at times he got a little breathless.
Here I and I've had something happen to me since I saw you last. I was up with a cold, you know, and it kept sticking, so the doc sent me for an X-ray checkup. Well, I mean, people are always having them. Anyway, I was better the morning I went to see about the result. It was a smashy little day, and I kept, you know, I felt it was a good, and I thought, God, this ain't a bad little life, drawing a sick money and making a few bob on the side and all that caper. Then when I got there, I sees the woman doctor. And do you know what she did? She showed me the X-ray plate. Two patches on me right now. Do you know what? I felt 10 years older on the spot. And when she'd asked me the questions the week before, every answer was the opposite she'd expected. She said, do you sweat? I said, no. Do you have pains in your back? I said, no. Have you lost weight? No. But once I got the news, I was waking up every night boiling in sweat. That from it, I would have been up to 150. and I have a great big pain in my bleeding back that sticks, and before I can turn around, I lost 7 pounds. Look at my arms, they're like drumsticks. They sent a van round with my invalid's dinner. Two old dames come in with it, sloshed it down on a plate. Here, I said, that's cold. That's right, you've got to order it up yourself, that'd be a shilling. To be quite frank, I says, I'll tell you you hadn't brought it, so do me a favour, don't call again. Well, I didn't want to be rude, but I felt I had to be told, you know. I'm going to a sanatorium, but I ain't going to tell us all where I am. I am coming in and saying, you're getting better, when I can see you're going down the nick. I made a mind at it, and we used to tell him to his face he looked marvellous. And as soon as we got out, we'd say, old Reg ain't going to last long. No, he's had it, we'd say. See, he's bleeding eyes sunk in his head. 3 months he lasted. I mean, what can I say to a sick bloke when they come to see him? I think you're going to snuff it, mate. You look on your last legs to me. Well, it's the only thing to say. I reckon I ain't had a bad little inning, so I'll see how long I last. And another thing, I ain't had a bad do I have with a little kid I've been going out with. She got in the family way and we had to fix it with a bloke, you know, to get shot of it. Well, it was marvellous at the time, and then this had to happen. Anyway, she came here because, well, after it's done, you know, you've got to wait and see for the thing to happen on its own. I did not have a rough time, I did. She was lying on that bed there, moaning away and one thing and the other. Be quite honest, I thought she was going to kick the bucket.
Oh.
How'd you feel, girl?
Oh, rotten. Oh, Alfie.
Oh, you do not look pale, you do.
Oh.
Your face is dead white, you know.
Oh, you're not going to leave me, are you, Alfie?
Yeah, you're not going to snuff it, are you, girl?
Oh, don't go off and leave me here alone, Alfie. Oh.
What can I do?
Oh, I don't want to be left alone. I'm frightened.
Now, look, don't lose your nerve, girl. Keep calm. Anyway, I can't do nothing.
Oh, Alfie.
What's that? What is it?
It hurts me.
What hurts you?
I don't know. Oh, I'm aching all over. Oh.
Can you feel it coming away yet?
Oh, I don't know. I feel ever so tired. Oh.
Well, look, I don't want to hang about too long.
What do you mean, Alfie?
Oh, I mean in case anything happens. I mean to you.
Oh.
Well, you can never be sure, can you? They'd be onto me like a shot, I mean, you know. Anyway, I've got a bloke to meet.
Oh. Alfie, you do love me, don't you? Oh.
Of course I love you.
Tell me you love me.
Oh, love you. I love you. I love you. Hey, are you satisfied?
Oh. Hold me hand, Alfie.
Yeah, all right. Oh, your hand and heart hot and sweaty. Blimey.
I'm frightened, Alfie. Oh.
Yeah, if anything happened, I'd get 3 years inside, you know. I might get more.
Oh. You're always thinking of yourself, aren't you, Alfie?
No, it ain't that, but what I mean is it ain't going to help you if, you know, you're pushing up Daisy and I'm inside. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, you ain't going to run off and leave me here, are you, Alfie?
No, it's stop going on about it. What's the matter with you?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Look, it don't upset me off when you start that crowning lark. I ain't anything like that. Yeah, don't get me wrong, but suppose you was to write one of them anonymous notes saying as how you had done it on your own and nobody knew anything about it.
How do you mean?
Well, just to be on the safe side, you know, that would cover me, see? Here, come on, I'll get you a bit of paper in it.
Oh.
No, not with my pen, they might tumble to that. You must have one in your bag.
Oh.
Here. Have a fag and stop groaning. You don't put the wind up me, you do. Had you got some paper? Here we are. This'll do.
What'll I say? Oh!
Now look, say something about you done it on your own and nobody didn't know nothing about it. Here. That's it. Don't forget to sign it at the bottom. I know it don't look nice, but it ain't going to do you no harm. Well, it'll put my mind at ease. I stuck by her, I did. I mean, I didn't go out and leave her, but I couldn't stick it out in the same room the way she was moaning and whatnot. So I slipped out and I had a drink. I got back as quick as I could. It was all dead quiet, and the first thing that crossed my mind was that she'd snuffed it. So I tiptoed in. It was all over. It had come away. She was all right, except she was lying there dead pale and quiet. She opened her eyes and she kept them fixed on me. Everything all right? How'd you feel, girl? She don't say nothing. Not with her mouth. But she says enough with her eyes. She kept watching me, see? Now, I ate anything like that. But then I put me up. I could see she hated me like poison. Well, then I had to get rid of it, see? At a stop, I did not get a shot, you know. Well, it was real, do you know what I mean? I mean, she was only 3 months gone or something, but I'd expected. Well, I didn't know what I'd expected, but this thing was real. Did not give me a shot. I was scared of touching it. Well, you know, I thought it might say something. Well, I knew it couldn't talk or cry like, but that was what went through my head. I mean, it looked as though it had life in it. It looked more human in a way than a proper child, you see? It was so little, and yet it was so perfect. Yeah, do you know what I thought? I'm its dad. That's funny, isn't it? But that's what I did think. It upset me proper. I began to cry. You know what I mean? I mean, tears just started to run down my face. Well, as I was keeping my mitts under the tap, scrubbing them, you see, a funny thing happened. You know how you sometimes hear noises in your head? Well, I kept thinking I could hear it crying, a baby crying. I don't know what it was. I mean, it might have only been the wind or something like that making funny noises, but I could hear it in my head, just like it was a child. When I got it all put away safe so it could never be found, I feels a bit better, and I put some water and makes a cup of tea, see? And I takes her a one in, with plenty of sugar and milk in it and that. She took the tea, she didn't say nothing to me, and I didn't say nothing to her. When she looked at me, it wasn't as bad as it had been before, but she didn't smile or nothing like that. The thought that crossed my mind was that it was all over between us. I didn't fancy it no more. I felt sorry for it, if you know what I mean, but I also felt sorry for myself. Oh, well, anyway, I didn't want reminding, and, well, that was how it worked out, you know. She got over it. Well, not what you'd say properly over it, but, I mean, she was quite friendly with me after that, you know. But, blimey, I couldn't fancy it again. I don't know what it was. I think men are more just, well, men are just more sensitive than women, you know. Matter of fact, I couldn't get it out of my mind the way she looked at me when I got into her. And it seemed that every time I saw her, things had come back, well, they'd just come back into my mind that I didn't want to know, you know. Oh, blimey, I'll never forget hearing that wailing going on. Of course, it was the imagination, do you know what I mean?
On my first meeting with Alfie after he'd recovered, he was a changed man in some ways.
Money ain't no use, women ain't no use, nothing ain't no use if you ain't got your good health. Good health is of primary importance. Money don't come nowhere. Being in the sanatorium taught me that. Blokes in there with fortunes in the bank, they wouldn't have to change their places willingly with the chap outside as a sweeping the leaves up. You know what I mean? They said they would. They did an operation on my back, collapsing a lung or something. You know what? I thought I was cut from top to bottom, and it turned out it was no more than half inch long. I couldn't believe it when I saw it in the mirror. Because you don't know what a treasure a bit of good help is, you know, till it's been taken away from you. No, I don't go in for that money caper anymore, so long as I just got enough. Because you don't no use nursing yourself. You've got to get out and get your good health. The blokes in that place that followed all the instructions was the last to come out. You've got to get yourself better. Do you know what I mean? And I definitely ain't going to worry over nothing no more. Or else the pounds will start rolling on me again. What difference does money make if you ain't got good health? You get that first, then you can go in for the money, the beautiful clothes and the women. Do you see what I mean? The trouble about money is, once you get some, it gets a grip on you. I knew a bloke worked at our firm as a watchman. And he'd never paid for a drink, saving up all his life. Got about 2,000 nicker in the bank. So he keeps talking about when he retires, he's going to build a bungalow, he's going to be living by the sea. He takes firewood home to his missus, he charges her for it. She was a good soul, Katie, but he made their lives a misery. He did all was on about money. Wouldn't go out at night, always got his eyes glued on the television. I used to go round there. You know, and if I asked him at the end of the evening what he'd been watching, he couldn't tell me a blind thing about it. He wouldn't eat proper either, begrudged the money he spent on grub. So the next thing, he's down to Seven Stone, he has to go into hospital. He comes out of hospital after having his ulcers and one or two other things removed, and he's too mean to go on holiday. We kept telling him, spend a couple of hundred, Nicker, it's going to get your health back. But he won't listen. He goes back to work too soon. Awk again. And the next thing, she's taking him up a cup of tea in bed one morning. He's lying there. He's snuffed it. Now, Katie's going to have a good time with all the money. So we think. Nuts on your life. When she gets hold of it, she's just as bad as him. She don't never go out, sits watching the telly, where she used to like going out to the pub. Now she'll snuff it next and have to leave it to somebody else. You know what I mean?
Yes?
Oh, good evening. I'm looking for a Mr. Elkins.
A Mr. Elkins?
Ah, Alfie Elkins.
That you, like?
Hello there.
Come in, mate. Ruby, this is that mate of mine, mate. You know I told you about him. We used to work together.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you, I'm sure.
Come in, mate. Fred, turn it down a bit, will you?
Okay.
Link, this is a mate of mine, Fred. I don't think you met him.
Hiya, Link.
How do you do?
What do you have to drink?
Oh, I wouldn't mind a beer.
We got everything except beer.
Have a whiskey.
Have you got a sherry?
Yes. Freddie, turn it on properly again, will you?
Okay. Well, what's up?
I like something going on in the background when I'm talking, or else it feels funny. Know what I mean, Freddie?
Yeah, I'm just the same, Ruby. It makes your voice sound funny when everything's quiet.
Yeah. Well, cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Ruby, can I show him round?
You can if you want.
Yes, a smashing flat.
Come on, Link. Here, I'll show you our bedroom, mine and Ruby's.
Aye, I'd like to see that.
What do you think of that lot?
Looks pretty luxurious.
Just what I said. I ain't not landed on my feet here, I have. She's crazy about me.
Ooh, it's rather warm in here, Alfie.
Yeah, well, it's the central heating, you see, and Ruby don't like the windows open. It brings the dust in. Oh, just up here, I'll open this window. Oh, that's better. Here. This is Ruby's wardrobe. Just have a look in. She and I've got some expensive clobber. What do you think of her?
Well, she's not bad, Alfie.
She's a beautiful dresser. She's a widow, see? She owns a lady's hairdresser, you know, I was telling you about. She could be 40, 45, or top weight 50. But she's in beautiful condition for a woman of her age.
Ah, she looked well cared for.
I love showing her up, you know. Here, look at that coat. Baby mink or something like that. Feel it, come on. That's worth a few hundred, nigger, for a start. You know what? I think I might marry and settle down with this one.
I can't quite see you settling down, Alfie.
That's where you're wrong. Do you know what? I've taken quite a fancy to Ruby. Apart from the fact she's got some money, I mean, she can look after herself. She don't want you telling her everything. What's up, Ruby?
Who opened the window, Alfie?
Oh, I did.
Who told you?
Well, it felt stuffy in here.
I could feel the draught. I told you, I don't want the place full of dust.
See what I mean, Link? She don't wrap nothing up. You tell her what you think, and she tells you what she thinks. You know where you are with Ruby. She's in marvellous condition, she is.
Yes? Hello there.
Is that you, Link? This is me.
Hello, Alfie.
You're at home? I mean, you're not going out?
No, no, not at this hour.
Right, I'll be round about quarter of an hour, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Here, Link, listen, I ain't ever asked you for loving, have I? I am now. Could you lend me 10 quid?
Yeah, sure, Alfie. I think so.
Right, I'll be seeing you.
You don't mind me walking around, Link, while I tell you?
Oh, walk as much as you want, Alfie. Yeah, let me fill your glass up.
Right, but I've got to be going soon.
How did it happen, Alfie?
She just flung me out.
Flung you out?
Straight up, she packed my case with all my things, and what she couldn't get into the case, she put in a couple of brown carrier bags.
What started it all?
Well, different things. The fact is, she said I was getting to be no use to her. You know what I mean. I did my best, but...
Oh, you can't do more than that.
Oh, I could have one time a day. She'd been having it off with my mate Fred for a few weeks now.
What, you mean the chap I
met? The ginger-haired geezer he used to slip in when I went out.
Oh, your own mate.
Well, it's better your own mate than a stranger.
Oh, I suppose so.
Nothing when you do the dirty on a woman. But blimey, I wasn't half-choked when I found her.
Ah, it must have been a shock.
Nothing's a shock in this life. More disappointment. Especially after all the money I'd spent on her.
Well, I thought she had plenty of her own.
If a rich woman takes you out, it always costs you more than if you took out a poor girl. You don't ever get nothing out of rich folk, they get it out of you. I'd nigh on 300 nickel when I first met her. Now I ain't got a sausage. And I've got no place either. I'm staying at Fredston.
Yeah, but isn't he the...
Yeah, he's the villain. He moved in, see, with Ruby in my place. Well, same as he said. It wouldn't have done me no good if he'd refused her. I can stay in his room till I get one of my own, so it's worked out handy that way that it was him.
Oh, I suppose so.
Yeah. Well, I ain't going to load you with my worries, mate. I can't stand other people. Thanks for the 10, Nicker, but I can't say when you'll get it back.
Oh, don't worry about that, Alfie.
She's the right cow, this Ruby. But I don't seem to be able to get her out of my mind.
You will.
I keep saying things against her, but it don't make no difference. She was very mumsy in one way, you know, when I was in her good books. Another thing was you could take her anywhere, you know, up the West End, and you wouldn't see a better dressed woman. I always used to sleep good. But these last two nights I've slept real bad. Blimey, I've got to get moving.
All right, Alfie. I'll come to the door with you.
I mean, I don't care for her no more than fly in the air, but I wish I could just get her off my mind.
Oh, it's a wet night. What about it?
Well, there's times when you don't mind a bit of rain. Do you know what I mean? I was lying there in bed last night, and I couldn't get her out of my thoughts. She was a beautiful dresser. I love the smell of her fur coat, you know, the one I showed you. Up to now, I ain't had room in my thoughts for anybody but myself, and definitely not for somebody who wasn't there. Well, I've got to be off.
Oh, so you don't catch cold?
What if I do? What's the use of good health, mate, if you ain't got peace of mind? You know what I mean? I'll see you.
So long, Alfie.
So long, mate.
In Alfie Elkins and His Little Life by Bill Norton, Alfie was played by Bill Owen. Ruby by Hilda Fenimore. Annie, Barbara Young. Elsie, Norma Griffin. Fred, Charles Leno. Station Officer, Joe Stern. And the narrator, John Brining. And that was Douglas Cleverdon's original 1962 production.